This is WSBT's Community Update on 96.1 WSBT.
Good morning, I'm John Hoffman. We're going to spend some time talking about arts and parks and venues with the executive director of SAME for the city of South Bend, Aaron Perry. We want to talk first, Aaron, about the floods that happened in the last couple of months. This is a record flood for the St. Joseph River in South Bend, and it did a good bit of damage. Start by just sort of outlining what the damage was and where we are with regard to getting that stuff fixed.
Sure. Thanks, John. Good to talk with you. The floods really overwhelmed all of our riverfront parks and trails. There wasn't a stretch of a riverfront that wasn't overwhelmed. For example, Leaper Park was entirely underwater. Half of Howard Park was underwater. These are big pieces of property for folks that are familiar with them. So it took us a while to be able to assess all the damage. We had to wait, of course, first for the water to recede, but we heard reports of damage coming in early on of bank failure and things of that nature. And so we knew that as the water receded, we were in for a treat and not a good one. And so we've finally been able to get out there with some civil engineers and structural engineers. FEMA has been in town as well to look through the damage along with some of our insurance adjusters. What it looks like is that the amount of damage will measure well into the millions. There are five key areas that will remain closed really throughout the summer as we work on some of the remediation efforts. So it's not as bad as it could have been. The thing I keep mentioning to folks is that we're very fortunate insofar as there wasn't a major loss of property or no major injuries reported. Yet I still caution folks that we're not out of the woods because these areas are, as I mentioned, remaining closed, and we've done our best to barricade them off and put up signage that indicates as such. But people are anxious, and the weather's warming up, and I know they want to get out there and run on the trails and play in the parks, and certainly we encourage that. But if you see a sign or a barricade, it's not that we forgot to remove them. There could be underlying issues that might not even be visible on the surface. So we just tell people to stay off those areas.
One of the things that surprised me about the flood as a record flood for the St. Joseph River in South Bend is that it didn't get more places. I would really have thought maybe some of the East Bank would have been underwater, parts of the East Bank that were not would have been, you know, areas you think of as low-lying. You don't quite realize how far above the river they actually are.
Yeah, the East Bank Trail is interesting that you mentioned that, back behind kind of the former Madison Center and the dog park. Never saw water up there. It's right on the riverbank. But what we did see was water start to raise to a level where it caused the bank to erode and fail. So we actually saw what we're kind of calling fault line style fissures form in a couple of areas there. And again, the water never got to the trail level, but the trail has been undermined. And so that's why that area remains closed, and it's going to be an effort that has to be repaired from the river level back up. There's another similar type failure on Riverside Drive near Penhook.
So. Yeah. Riverside Drive is another spot that struck me as being particularly vulnerable. Now, I was not out there when the flood was actually underway, so I don't know how high the water actually got. Did it ever get over Riverside Drive in spots?
I don't think it ever got over Riverside Drive. I could be mistaken there, but again, this was an issue of the bank erosion where it didn't quite get up to the trail level, but it undermined the area beneath it. Now, in Penhook Park off of Riverside Drive, that was entirely overwhelmed. It came all the way up to the building, and the building even got flooded to some degree. So it was an impressive amount of water coming through our system.
All right. You said that there will be sections of trails and so on closed really throughout the year as that repair work continues. Do you have a time to sort of have everything back to the way it was?
We're just now in the process of we finally got some of the evaluation done. We're in the process of hiring contractors, so I don't have a timeline, but these aren't necessarily easy fixes. Now, luckily, we're fortunate enough that some of these areas we've had plans underway. A part of MySB Parks and Trails contemplated improving some of these areas already. So we've got a little head start over the past year or so during public planning processes and otherwise. So some of these areas will come back better than new. We had already planned to make those improvements and had financing in place for that. So we're fortunate. My estimation is, though, that we'll be well into the fall. But hopefully by the end of this year, we'll have everything open back up.
You alluded to where I wanted to go next, which is the long-term plan for improving parks, in particular in South Bend. I know there's an extensive plan that's going to cover a lot of parks. I'd like you to give me a good outline of that and sort of what the plans are, where we're going, and what the timeline is for the overall improvements apart from flood repair.
Yeah, we're very enthusiastic about this. It's an initiative we've called My SB Parks and Trails, and we called it My SB Parks and Trails because it was developed by the community. Really, over the past several years, there's been hundreds of planning sessions, thousands of hours of community meetings. We've got dozens and dozens of pieces of feedback online and written and otherwise. And all kinds of neighborhood planning efforts. We took all those and compiled them into one big master plan that impacts over 30 different park properties and more than a dozen miles worth of trail systems throughout every neighborhood in the city. As we developed this plan, not only did we contemplate all of those other plans and pieces of feedback that we got, but we really used several what we call impact drivers. We looked to influence things like social equity by our investments. What kind of impact does it have on neighborhoods, and what are the economics? What are the ROIs of these types of investments? What impact does it have on public health, public safety, and then even a lean towards, of course, ecological stewardship? And we're looking at things like native plantings and invasive species management and stormwater management and carbon offsets and all of those things. So we took some of the best data available to us as well. We partnered with the Trust for Public Land and used a series of data that they were able to provide us, as well as a group called Green Play, who worked on a system called the Geo Reference Standards and Amenities Program, to kind of look at all of our parks and the standards that we call for. And so what that data gave us was also a look at what parks, how are we serving the community equity and equitably, and what parks needed, really objectively needed the investment. And so all of that data came together. And so that's a mouthful to get us there. But what we're really excited about is the plan that came back with about $52 million worth of improvements. Some of these are really marquee improvements, like the Charles Black Center that's going to double in size, have three basketball courts, a music studio, a bike shop, a computer lab, a bigger kitchen, all kinds of things, irrigated soccer fields out at LaSalle Park, we hope to do. Some of them are things like the Howard Park, the new ice trail that has undulations in it, and the interactive water features, and the new community center there. Really big marquee projects that we're very proud of. And some of them are just things that we've owed the community for so long, and deferred maintenance items, things like fixing headstones at the city cemetery or ensuring our all of our park restrooms are up to par and ADA accessible, and that they look maybe slightly better than prison restrooms as they in some scenarios. Playgrounds and pavilions and picnic benches and things like that are just that we just owe back to the neighborhoods. And then the final thing I'll mention that I'm particularly excited about is in our research, we found that there are some areas of the community that just are geographically underserved by our system. And so a part of the $52 million plan includes over $2 million to introduce new parks and partnerships to serve some areas that perhaps didn't have parks nearby in recent history. So we're pretty enthusiastic.
Let me bring you back to one specific item you mentioned, which is Howard Park and the ice trail. Did you get some pushback from people who wanted to keep the traditional ice rink and simply rebuild or improve it?
Yeah, it's important, like I said, in all of our projects to talk with the community and the users and to kind of see what folks wanted. And certainly the ice hockey population was a group that we wanted to talk to. What the information really told us, though, is that people are looking for experiences, and experiences that they can't get elsewhere. And so we like to challenge ourselves as we're doing our designs and our programming is what can we offer that nobody else can or will offer. And so we're aware that there are the rink style hockey experiences that already exist in our community nearby also. So we got Notre Dame and of course, the Icebox. And there's other outdoor ice rinks in the immediate vicinity. We wanted to provide something that was really recreational and a draw. And so this ice trail concept kind of came to line. What it's going to be is it winds its way through the park. It'll have undulations. It'll only be the second one in the country that has undulations. So you kind of slightly go up and down as you skate. It'll be the only one in the world that we know of that you'll skate over a bridge at one point in time. So people can walk under you and there's skaters above. So really neat experience that you'll get in and around the park. But we did want to make sure there was some hockey, to your point. So we also are installing an ice pond. It won't be as large as an ice rink, but it will allow for some recreational hockey, kind of broom ball style hockey as well. So that'll be an important, it'll continue to be an important part of Howard Park.
You said this total project is something on the order of $50 million. Where is that money coming from?
Yeah, we were able to put together a pretty responsible financing package. I talk about it in kind of a third, a third, and a third. One third of the financing is private funds, so grants that we were awarded, private investments, partnerships from different community businesses and organizations. People like the University of Notre Dame, the Pokagon Band of the Potawatomi Indians, the Regional Cities Grant Initiative. So about a third of it came from there. About a third of it comes from TIF funds, so redevelopment funding. And a third of it comes from a special parks bond. That park bond was made possible by the tax dollars that were formerly going to the College Football Hall of Fame. And so we were able to put together this entire financing package without introducing any new taxes, without raising taxes or otherwise. So we're pretty proud of the package. And alongside of all that, we're retooling the department. You mentioned venues, parks, and arts at the start. Part of what we're doing is positioning ourselves well for the future by combining different areas that historically been siloed off and working on some economies of scale and combining service maintenance contracts and otherwise. We're freeing up dollars to put in special capital improvement funds that make sure we take care of these things well into the future so we don't ever find ourselves with property that hasn't seen investment in some instances like we're seeing today in nearly 100 years.
Yeah. So the prospects then for what we're going to see, which of these major projects will come online first? What's the timeline for getting the big stuff done?
Yeah, Charles Black Center will be one of the major ones that opens first. We'll see that open this fall, right around the start of the school year, maybe Labor Day ribbon cutting out there. So we're excited about that one. The Rum Village Dog Park will also open this year. Probably late summer it's looking like for that one. And then most of the other projects you'll see get underway around the riverfront yet this year. Howard Park, Sites Park, a lot of the riverfront areas, trail systems. So we'll see those kind of come online in 2019. And then throughout that period of time, so a couple of the other marquee ones out at Penhook and Leaper, Pulaski Park, those will start next summer. And so those will probably be a 2020 opening. And then all the neighborhood parks and all of the restrooms and playgrounds and a lot of that deferred maintenance items you'll see happen again piecemeal over the next couple of years. So really by the end of 2020, all of this should be done. So it's a rather aggressive timeline.
Yeah, it certainly is. Aaron Perry is Director of Venues, Parks, and Arts. Aaron, we'll have you back in the future on Community Update to talk about some of the other issues with venues and the arts around town, also part of your brief here. We appreciate very much you spending some time with us today. Aaron Perry, thanks a lot.
Thanks, John. Appreciate the opportunity.
The views expressed on WSBT's Community Update are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, WSBT Radio, its staff, or management. Join us again next week on Community Update on The Sports Leader, 96.1 WSBT.